Sentire media.
Well, I have a confession to make. I am a vegetarian. Oh my goodness. Actually, I'm a reluctant vegetarian. And what I mean by that is that I would do pretty much anything to be able to eat meat again. And I love meat. And my husband's rolling his eyes at me right now. But it's true. I tell you what, one of the things about living in Tuscany that I loved so much was the trattoria, the restaurant that you could go to that had all of these grilled meats and, really sort of home-cooked meals. There's nothing better than a bistecca fiorentina, those huge jumbo, porterhouse steaks that they cook. Sometimes not enough, in my opinion. They're still pretty raw, but the meat is so buttery good that it doesn't really matter. In fact, you can't overcook those kinds of meats or else it wouldn't taste nearly as good. And there'd be times that I would go, we'd drive for ages. There's a little place in a town called Città delle Pieve, which is this beautiful hilltop town on the border of Umbria and Tuscany. And there's a restaurant there called Trattoria Bruno Coppetta. Trattoria Bruno Coppetta. And aside from having really the most incredible food in every way, shape, and form, and wine, and they're the place, one of the places that has, they make their pasta inside, mix it inside the big cheese wheel. But they also have this grilled chicken that, my chef's son is, I'm sure, cringing because he does every time I would, order chicken in a restaurant. But this chicken was just insane. I mean, my mouth is watering thinking about it, and I'm a vegetarian. So why am I a vegetarian reluctantly? Well, a few years ago, I had a bit of a health problem. And so I went to the doctors here, which, by the way, are incredible. And I'll talk about healthcare in an upcoming episode. But what we discovered was that I wasn't digesting meat very well. Fish was fine. So I do eat fish, but I can't eat any other meat. So reluctantly, about 5 years ago, I stopped eating any kinds of meat and eat only vegetarian, which, it really makes me want to cry most of the time. And you will see me sometimes, loitering around an amazing steakhouse every so often, just wishing that I could go in and partake. But, I understand what it's like to be a vegetarian in a country that has the most incredible food. And this episode today, what I want to talk about is what happens if you have an eating condition or a health reason. Or maybe it's just by choice. Maybe you're vegan, you're celiac, you're vegetarian, whatever it is. What can you do in Italy? Can you survive? Can you get by and still enjoy all this incredible food here? Well, this episode, we're going to dive into it and find out how. I'm Samantha Wilson, Chief Dreammaker at SmartMoveItaly.com, and this is A New Life in Italy, a show where each week I take you behind the scenes of what it's really like to move to Italy, introduce you to some fascinating people, answer your questions, and show you how starting a new life in Bel Paese is possible for you. Okay, so we have an episode about food, which, is my favorite topic. And if you listened to the episode, last week's episode, I talked about language and getting over and learning how to speak Italian and the confidence. And I can tell you what you learn usually, people learn at the beginning, is restaurant Italian. And this is, kind of funny because my husband often says that the best Italian he can speak is restaurant, which means he can order on the menu, ask for the bill, ask for a glass of wine, and pretty much can read any kind of food label there is. So this is pretty common in Italy because, as you know, Italy is a country that is famous for its food and its unique way of cooking, meaning that it is usually very clean and organic and pretty simple food in Italy. And this episode, we're not going to talk about all the different types of food in Italy. I'm going to do that in a future episode. But what I want to talk about is really, if you love to eat and you love food, but you have some kind of restrictions, there is still a lot of ways that you can enjoy the Italian food. And actually, there's a lot of Italian traditional food that is based in and on and around a vegetarian diet. And so if you are a vegetarian, whether you're reluctant like me or by choice, like many people I know, you can actually eat very well. It can depend on where you live though. So I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview, in my opinion, of where some of the best food can be found in Italy if you're a vegetarian, for example. So thinking again about Italy, just think about the geography. So the north is a little colder, and then the south is obviously around the sea and warmer. So obviously diets do tend to, the Mediterranean diet does tend to fit into those geographical zones and climate as well. Because in Italy, one of the things that I truly love about living here is that when it comes to what we eat, and how we prepare our food, it really depends on where we live and the season that we are in. And we do not eat food all year round, the same kind of food all year round. It depends on the season. Like right now, we're coming into March, so it's the early spring. We will be out picking wild asparagus. And if anybody has ever had the luck really of trying and eating wild asparagus, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you're in for a treat, because what this is it's just like a regular asparagus, which, by the way, back in Canada, you wouldn't catch me dead eating a piece of asparagus, because it was like, to me, it was like chalk and horrible. And here it's sweet and, you know, fibrous and really, really delicious. And wild asparagus is different. It's long, really like long and super, super skinny. And you have to go and hunt for it almost, and into the bush and into the, you know, the sides of the hills. And there's these secret spots that everybody has, usually in the springtime, early, early springtime, where the wild asparagus will start to grow. And what happens is if you know where these little spots are that tend to have more of it, you'll head out there as early as possible before all the old women get out there with their baskets and clear all of the ground. So we have a couple of spots actually in the hills around Cortona that we have been picking wild asparagus for, sneaking in for years. And what you have to do is you have to bring these little bags and a great big knife, because you have to like hack at the bottom of the asparagus, and you have to walk into the bush and in through all the thistles and all the, you know, brambles. And you know, it's not easy work by any stretch. This is why when you buy it in the store, it's so expensive. So, you know, you'll dig through all of these brussels and bushes and dead leaves and stuff, and you're looking for a specific kind of a plant. And then once you find the leaves of this plant, you have to even just look a little bit further, and you'll start to see these little sprigs of green, very thin green, that, you know, obviously look like asparagus, and that is wild asparagus. And we will pick those and, you know, hack them down, and we all go off into our own little spots and come back with our bags full of as much asparagus as we can find. And then obviously that evening we make one of my favorites, which is a risotto with wild asparagus and pecorino cheese and pepper. It's just incredible. Now, the reason I've gone off on this tangent is because right now that's what we're eating. That's what we're looking for. We're eating this wild asparagus. We're eating the vegetables that are fresh, the fruit that is grown at this time of the year. We're not looking for watermelon in March, or we're not going to be eating, root vegetables in the summertime. Italy is a food culture of really, especially in the south, of poveri, so of like a poor person's food. So you kind of eat what you have, and you eat organically, and you eat pretty clean and pretty simple. So if you are a vegetarian and you are looking to, you know, eat in this way and looking for vegetables, you have to be prepared that you're only going to get certain kinds of vegetables at a certain time of year, depending on where you live in Italy. So you have to kind of get used to it. Now, living in Tuscany, it's not as easy for me, because really the typical, although yes, don't jump on me, I know there's lots and lots of vegetables in Tuscany, but typically what we see on a menu, for example, is like spinach and some beans, and we always see potatoes, of course. And sometimes we'll see eggplant and zucchini, and in the wintertime, some squash. These kinds of things are really your typical Tuscan side dishes, right? This is what we typically eat. And if you're a vegetarian, you know, and tomatoes always everywhere in Italy. So this is what we'll eat typically here. And then it always seems to come, you know, in the trattorias, you've always got the big beefsteak or the grilled chicken or the lamb or something that goes with it. So as a vegetarian in Tuscany, it can be a little bit harder to find more variety in your vegetable dishes or in the way that they can serve their vegetarian meals. Of course, pasta in every regard, you can always find a vegetarian option if that's where you want to go. But if you go up north in Italy, your choices will change even a little bit more because it's a little bit colder, so your seasons are a little bit different. Your foods will be very rice-based and almost stewed-based up there. So when you're looking for specific kind of meals, think about that. You know, that all year long fresh vegetables that you think you're eating in your home country really don't taste anything like they do here because we only eat them when they're fresh and ready. Now, the best place, in my opinion, for vegetarians, other than, you know, you can find some good vegetarian restaurants all over the place, but the best place that I find to eat vegetarian is in the south of Italy, and in particular in Puglia. Now, Puglia to me is a region that really won my heart, I think, the first time I went, and I have a podcast about, it's called The First Time, and it was the first time I went to Puglia, because it was this explosion of senses down there. And one of the things that I've always found, and forgive me for all my Tuscan friends and family, that the best food, in my opinion, in Italy is in the south. It is in Puglia. And maybe that's because I'm a vegetarian. And the options are vast. I mean, they don't just do a vegetable dish. They have all kinds of, you know, souffles and pies and you know, crostini and bruschette and all kinds of different ways that they can use their fresh vegetables, which, you know, their growing season is longer, it's warmer. And of course, you know, they have the staples down there like eggplant, and which, by the way, I still don't like eggplant at all. I always pick it off of everything that we have. But there's lots of options and choices down south. And one thing that I do find as well as being a vegetarian is when I go to a restaurant, you know, the question is always in Italy, the Italians know their food. They just do. They grow up with learning about the importance of fresh and local and seasonal vegetables and food in general. And so even the little tiny kids understand what's in a pesto sauce. It's just part of who they are, part of their culture, and they're very proud of it. So also, they're also very proud of their, you know, their meat and their steaks and their grills and their barbecues. And depending on where you are, you can have different kinds of meats. And I always felt really embarrassed, actually, when I'd go into a restaurant and I'd say, I'm sorry, I'm vegetarian. What do you have? And I can tell you that some places say, oh, you know, we have a pasta, or I can make you a special antipasti or something like this, that, you know, with just the vegetables on it. And don't think that some of those things will not be, like, if there's a deep fried piece, like let's say deep fried zucchini, which are incredible, zucchini flowers, if they're on your plate, don't think it's always going to be deep fried in vegetable oil. So remember that if you're a vegetarian. You know, we often get these things like, oh no, we're vegetarian because my best friend is a vegetarian, and not reluctant by choice. And when we go out together, we both say, oh no, we're vegetarian, what do you have? And we always get the, oh, we have chicken, or, you know, we have fish, or we have, you know, something that's cooked in meat fat or things like this. So make sure that if you're asking for food that is vegetarian in an Italian restaurant, especially an old style trattoria, make sure that you really ask them, you know, how are they cooking the food? If you're, you know, if you're a vegetarian by choice and you're particular on that, make sure you ask them how they're cooking your food, because, you know, the approach to vegetarian eating here isn't as really as severe, I guess, or as strict as what you might be used to. And what I was saying is that when I go into a restaurant, I sometimes am embarrassed to say that I'm a vegetarian. And maybe that's just in my own head because I wish I wasn't. But sometimes I will say, you know, I'm vegetarian, what do you have? And they'll roll their eyes and they'll say, oh, you're missing. Or they'll try to get me to eat something like, here, try this. And you know, I'll want to, and I'll come so close, and admittedly, sometimes I will try, but I suffer later. But just be prepared that maybe it's not something that wherever you are, especially if you're in a small town, in the countryside, for example, you may not get as many options, and you may have to get a little bit creative, and maybe you have to explain to your server what type of food you want to eat. They're very accommodating. You know, food is important, and that you enjoy the food that they make is even more important. So just keep that in mind if you're a vegetarian. Now, I am not a vegan, or vegano, which they call them here. I'm not a vegan. In fact, I don't only know maybe one vegan friend, and she has, you know, she eats pretty much, you know, mostly just raw and fresh vegetables, I think. I mean, I haven't really talked to her too much about being a vegan, but I do notice that there are more vegan type restaurants, or more like vegan type takeaways or special delis that are offering vegan food. In the grocery store, for example, you can find, you know, vegan cheese and vegan, I don't know, is that an oxymoron? But vegan cheese and, you know, vegan type foods so that you can still eat. I mean, this is all going to be processed and manufactured food, unfortunately. So if you really want to enjoy Italian food, you know, get into the vegetables, because they taste unlike anything that you're used to eating. And I know those of you who've come here on your holidays, when you eat here, part of the experience or the memory of such great food is, you know, it's got to do with the environment and the wine and the company and that you're on holiday, but it also has to do with the freshness and the seasonality of the vegetables. A tomato tastes like a tomato here, and we don't gas anything. Everything is organic and it's local. So, you know, being a vegetarian, being a vegan, there's ways that you can get around it. But the guest that I have on today is we're going to talk about another subject, which I think is so important, because although I know there are not a lot of celiacs, really, I mean, there are many, but there's not as many true celiacs that can eat gluten as there are people who choose not to eat gluten. But gluten, as you know, in Italy, we love our pasta. We will eat pasta every single day, hands down. Every Italian will eat pasta daily. And then, of course, there's pizza, and then there's the breads, especially if you go down to the south. So if you are celiac or you are gluten-free, choosing to be gluten-free, you know, Italy seems to be built on a big pile of flour, so, or salmonella for their pasta. So this is a big question that we need to know. How do we go about eating in Italy if we are celiac or gluten-free? And I have invited a very special guest on today's episode who is a celiac, actually discovered that she was one and had to learn how to live this way and enjoy everything there is to do in Italy, and eat and dine and really not feel like she's missing out. My guest today is Catalin Varela, and she has a website and an Instagram channel called Celiacs in Italy, or Celiac in Italy. So if you haven't seen it or you're interested in this, please follow her, because she's got some incredible tips if you are celiac or if you are gluten-free in Italy. Now, she lives in Florence, and she had this unexpected diagnosis in the US that really changed her way of eating. And this, combined with her really sort of strong desire to help you if you are celiac or choose to be gluten-free, or people who are suffering from, you know, the do's and the don'ts of what you can and cannot eat, that has really led her to become this gluten-free travel consultant here in Italy. So she plans these stress and gluten-free adventures throughout all of Italy. So regardless of where you're traveling to, you don't have to be here in Florence, but you could be somewhere else. And if you want to learn about food and how you can eat and where to go, she is your person. And she's our person today. So I want to welcome her to the show. Hi, Catalin. Nice to have you here. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show today. I think you probably know that I am a reluctant vegetarian. I'm not a gluten-free eater, but I know you are. And I know our listeners have a ton of probably questions about how you go about living in Italy, in the land of pizza and pasta. How could you possibly live as a celiac in Italy?
Thank you, Samantha, for the introduction. I'm happy to be here. And you did such a great job of introducing me. So my name is Catalin Varela, and I'm more commonly known as the celiac in Italy, and I post just all about my life as a celiac living in Florence as an American. And I just act as an English-Italian speaking resource for people with celiac disease or gluten intolerance. Usually I say a medically necessary gluten-free diet, planning trips to Italy to kind of be the midway point.
Okay. So yeah, as you know, we've talked before, I have, you know, some dietary restrictions as well, but I'm not celiac. So can you just explain what this is? And I'm going to say this because I know a ton of people who are gluten-free, but are not necessarily celiac. So can you tell me the difference between the two?
Of course. So celiac disease is an autoimmune disease, similar to like type 1 diabetes or lupus, all in that category. Autoimmune disease just means that our immune system can't differentiate between what is our own cells and what isn't. And celiac disease, obviously, it's gluten, even in the tiniest microscopic little bits. So we are religiously and very seriously gluten-free. The biggest difference between celiac disease and a gluten intolerance or sensitivity is that celiac disease can be diagnosed. It's first genetic. You have to be genetically predisposed. And then there's usually a moment in which the genes are turned on, for lack of a better term, in life, and they start to present.
Oh, so you...
Which happened...
For you. You were just going to say it happened for you. So you weren't always... didn't always have this problem.
Right. So I was diagnosed when I was 16 after about a year of illness. And I was actually misdiagnosed with leukemia before I was accurately diagnosed with celiac disease.
That's scary.
So needless to say, celiac disease felt like a blessing in disguise for me, because I thought, thank God it wasn't what they thought it was.
Yeah. That must have been very scary. I think that these food intolerant, I mean, I know that celiac isn't, I guess there is, you know, it is an intolerance to gluten, isn't it? I mean, is there an intolerance to something else, or is it primarily gluten that causes these problems? And what actually happens to you if you eat gluten or something's cross-contaminated?
So because our immune systems can't differentiate between foreigner and self, if you're consuming gluten, then your immune system is attacking the lining of your small intestines. More specifically, they're called villi. They're these little fingers that sit in your small intestines and help absorb the nutrients from your food. So one of the most common telltale signs of celiac disease is malnutrition, is weight loss, a lot of GI symptoms, so nausea and vomiting. But they've identified over 300 different symptoms of celiac disease, and mine were very neurological. So I had a very big personality shift. My mom, who was taking care of me at the time, always said that it seemed like someone had turned the dimmer switch off on my personality.
Really? So what you were eating was actually causing you some mental health issues as well as physical issues.
Yes. So joint pain was part of it, but the neurological symptoms were huge. GI symptoms as well. I had lost, I think it was 35 pounds in a month.
Wow.
So very, you know, physically and mentally taxing. And I am glad to have a diagnosis now. Yeah. And the healing journey is long. It's not as if you get diagnosed with celiac disease, you start eating gluten-free, and then magically everything is fine and you're totally better. Mm-hmm. And there's a lack of understanding in this area, especially in the American healthcare system. It's pretty common for celiac to get a diagnosis and then not really be given any further steps beyond that to repair what has already been done.
And you were diagnosed in what year?
It was 2016.
Okay, so almost 10 years ago. And were the resources there, I mean, are they better now than they were back then? I'm assuming they must be.
I would like to think so. The gluten-free community changes at a rapid rate. Even just the products that were available when I was diagnosed compared to now are very different.
Yeah.
So I do think that there have been changes, but there's definitely dramatic differences in the way that it's handled in America and the way that it's handled in Italy, which really is what has led me to live here.
So what's led you to live to, were you not worried when you wanted to move here, considering that, you know, that it seems to be gluten is one of the staples, you know, flour is one of the staples in the Italian diet?
Yeah, a common misconception, and definitely something that I believed before I had ever visited Italy. And what brought me to Italy was I was studying medical anthropology in university, and I wrote my thesis about cultural impact on the quality of life for celiacs. So I was traveling around Europe and just experiencing what is it like for me to be a celiac in these different countries, and how easy or difficult is it for me to socialize, and what sort of impact does that have on my mental health and my quality of life? Which is what brought me to Italy in the first place. And I had that same misconception. I had a whole bag of beef jerky and trail mix, thinking that I'm just going to survive this week because it's going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. I was met with a completely opposite experience. I felt just incredibly welcomed, and the options were unlike anything I'd ever experienced. And just the general understanding.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around celiac disease in the States, probably because it's so popular to eat gluten-free now, that those of us who are doing it as a medical treatment tend to get overlooked.
Do you think it's also the Italian focus or the commitment to what they eat, like why they pay so much attention to their diet and their health in general, that maybe they were more open to this or were more are more aware of the problems?
No, for sure. I've always said that I think Italians are so welcoming because food is such an integral part of the culture and just the main means to connect with other people. So what sense, I almost said this in Italian, che senso ha, what sense does it have to make someone else feel excluded? I think it's, food is so important in Italy that it's also important that everybody else feel that they can participate in that part of the culture.
Right. It's sharing. I mean, and I know people who are chefs and have been chefs all their lives. And one of the things they love about it is that, you know, it's not just watching people enjoy what they're making, but it's this almost, it's like it's language. It's like how people connect both to the history and the now and the present and the community. So food is really important. And I'm really glad that you're talking about this in Italy, because I know that not just people who want to move to Italy, but people who are coming here on vacation who may be celiac or just choosing not to eat any gluten, you know, to know that there's choices. So tell me about that. I know you live in Florence, but have you traveled all through Italy? Did you experience this anywhere in Italy or just mostly here in Tuscany?
All through Italy might be an overstatement because it's a country that has a lot to offer, but I have traveled quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I would say that it's true across the board for Italy as a country. I'm a little biased, and I will say that Florence, in my opinion, is one of the best cities even in the world for celiacs. But yeah, even in other cities in Italy, I've felt very welcomed and had a lot of options. Right. There's plenty of dedicated gluten-free places in lots of cities around Italy, especially if you're staying in more major places like Rome and Milan and even Venice and Naples. But even if they're not dedicated gluten-free, we have the Italian Celiac Association, which does a lot to educate restaurants and even has a training and certification program for restaurants to participate in.
Oh.
So celiacs can feel safe eating out.
So can restaurants get like a certification, like they're certified gluten-free and go through some training? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes. So it's called the Alimentazione Fuori Casa Project by the Associazione Italiana Celiachia. So restaurants that are interested, they pay, I think it's €150 now a year, and they attend a training. And then they also have to have their kitchen set up in different ways to avoid cross-contact, and they recertify every year. They get a big red sticker that they stick very proudly in their window. So if you're ever walking down the street of Florence and you see a big red sticker, it has a plate and it says Alimentazione Fuori Casa, that would be...
That means it's certified, almost like a certified gluten-free, that they've done all of these things to make sure that they're serving safe food for you.
Correct.
So maybe what we'll do is we'll get that a little image of that sticker that you're talking about. We'll put it in the show notes. So if people want to recognize it rather than just the long Italian word, they can take a look and now they'll know what to look for.
Great idea.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, you're talking a lot about restaurants here, but what about if you just want to shop? I mean, is there dedicated grocery stores? I know we're talking about Florence, but I'm sure, like you said, most major cities have the options. How about shopping? Do you find a good variety of foods?
Yes, definitely. We do have dedicated gluten-free grocery stores, which for Americans is just an absolutely wild concept. I don't know that I've ever seen that in an American city. It's been many years since I've lived in America, so maybe they've been enlightened since then. But yes, we have dedicated gluten-free. There's one in Florence. There's like five or six in Rome. There's a few in Milan. But even just in regular grocery stores like Co-op and Conad and Esse Lunga, one of my favorite parts about living in Italy is that all of the gluten-free things are organized onto their own shelf.
Yeah,
So in
separated.
America, usually if you're looking for gluten-free pasta, you have to go to the pasta aisle and then search out the gluten-free option, which is not always obvious and can have a lot of really confusing labeling. And in Italy, we have one senza glutine aisle or end cap, and you can just feel safe eating what's there.
Right. So what's the name of a, is there like a chain store? I know you said there's a few in Rome and one in Florence. Is there a brand name, like you said, like a Conad or something?
The one in Florence is called Bottega Artigiana del Gusto. It's a little far out of the city center. I believe it's closer to Gavignana than it is to Florence, but doable, especially if you're going in the direction of Piazza di Michelangelo. The one in Rome, they have, I think it's five locations now. They're called Celiachiamo Lab, I believe, or Celiachiamo.
And this is like the, this is like a chain store, like a franchise almost.
The one in Rome is a franchise, yes.
Okay, good. So there's special places you can buy your own food that you can cook at home, and then there's also lots of restaurant choices. So my question to you, because you're a Florentine, well, sort of, what is your favorite gluten-free restaurant in Florence?
Oh, it's such a
I
hard
know, hard
question.
question, because there's lots of choices, right?
There's so many choices, and I feel so spoiled to be able to say this because I used to have maybe three places that I could eat at total. So this is a great problem to have. I would probably say my favorite, they have two restaurants. One, they do schiacciata, so the very Tuscan sandwiches between focaccia with the different cheese and meats and vegetables inside. It's called Scrano. It's also in Via dei Neri, just a few doors down from All'Antico Vinaio, so we can feel very involved in that culture. So All'Antico Vinaio is a world famous sandwich shop, and they've kind of taken over this street of Via dei Neri. I don't even know how many storefronts they have now, but on any given day, you could walk down Via dei Neri and it would be hour long waits to go to the sandwich shop. And it really feels like a privilege when you experience this as a celiac because you get to proudly walk past everyone who's standing in line for their gluten-filled sandwich to have a gluten-free sandwich with a significantly shorter wait.
And still be enjoying. I mean, it probably tastes, I mean, I know you don't taste the other ones, so you can't compare, but you know, I know I've had gluten-free products and gluten-free bread here for sure, and meats and stuff, and in the past, and it's it probably tastes exactly the same. And the big stuffed sandwiches, just like the ones that people are seeing all over Instagram.
Yeah, I don't think I often bring friends there, and I mean, a lot of my friends know that I have celiac disease, especially with my very outwardly online platform. But even if I don't tell them up front that it's a gluten-free sandwich, they all have a really great time and enjoy it. And then I like to throw it in afterwards of like a surprise. You liked this sandwich and it was gluten-free and you didn't know it, haha.
Yeah, good for you. Well, listen, you just said something that I want to talk about right now. I want to talk about what you do here with regards to your tours and your, you know, the services that you have for people that might need a little bit of help when they come here, either they're living here or they are, you know, just traveling through.
Gosh, I do so much. I'm involved in the gluten-free Italy community probably as much as one could be. The main thing that I do is my travel consultations, and I've got different levels, quote unquote, of consultations, anywhere from just a half hour chat of let's talk about your trip and I'll give you some recommendations, to a full on we chat for an hour. We can have email follow-ups. I can also help with reservations. Because it can feel scary to make a reservation at a place if you don't speak Italian,
And
and helping understanding labeling and things like that.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's probably pretty important because of the language problem. And I think that, you know, if you are truly celiac and have, can have some pretty complicated, bad complications if you eat the wrong food or cross-contaminated food, it can be kind of scary. It'd be a lot scary, I think.
Very anxiety inducing, and I think that's what keeps, or I know that's what keeps celiacs back from traveling. It's what kept me away from traveling for a long time. And being able to have positive experiences like this is what makes the world feel like it's not so scary and like your world is bigger than it tends to be if you have celiac disease. But I think that it's comforting to be able to speak to a native English speaker who also speaks fluent Italian. I almost said Fiorentino. I speak that too. There's not a language barrier between me and my clients, so they can feel like they can communicate with me openly and clearly. But there also isn't a language barrier between me and the restaurants that they're dining at. So I'm not afraid to give them my open and honest opinion and tell them which places I think is worth it and which places aren't doing what they're supposed to.
Right. I love it. I think it is such a great service that you're doing. And I think that, you know, I agree with you that travel is, I think when you can't travel or people who don't do a lot of travel, they're very insular and they're, you know, you only grow when you have new experiences. But if you have something that, you know, is very serious can happen if you don't have the right support or the right information in place, you have to be careful. And in the past, you had to probably wing it. And like you said, just bring a bag of beef jerky everywhere you went so that you can, you know, you can make sure that you're safe. But when you're in, you know, people like you are in place to help people feel safe and then still love all that Italian food that most people, you know, connect Italy with. A lot of people travel here solely for the food. And I'm sure if you have dietary restrictions, you think, oh man, I miss out that on that big part of the experience, but it sounds to me like you absolutely don't have to here.
No, I don't think you have to at all. And I think being able to participate in culture and food that way is really, really important, which leads me to my newest project is my culinary experiences in Florence. So I've had the opportunity to meet some of the people that I've worked with online or people who follow me for a really long time who end up visiting Florence. And we either have lunch or dinner together and we get to connect as fellow celiacs and they can pick my brain about life here in Italy or take a multi-stop journey. So visit one place for appetizers and one place for dinner and one place for dessert. And this is truly the real gluten-free Fiorentino experience.
Wonderful. Now, where can they find out all that information?
So the best place to learn more is my website. It's just celiacinitaly.com. Or you can follow me on Instagram at Celiac in Italy.
Well, what a pleasure talking to you. You know, I learned a lot, actually. I really did. I have to admit, I was really pretty ignorant about celiac disease. I mean, I knew some of it, but certainly I know for sure I didn't realize all of the ways that you can enjoy the Italian food or enjoy life here and without really feeling like you're restricted, which is awesome. And that there's some resources for people too. So thank you so much for coming on. It has been such a pleasure chatting with you.
My pleasure. It's been really lovely.
Well, it goes without saying that, you know, Italians are as passionate about their food as they are about their families and their friends and their life, really. You know, that being said, there are a lot of Italians who have made a lifestyle choice to be either vegan or vegetarian. And those are, there's those that suffer from celiac disease. Maybe they're lactose intolerant and they have nutritional deficiencies that restrict what they can eat, just like you and just like me. So it doesn't mean that they don't enjoy their food and certainly doesn't mean that you can't enjoy your food here in Italy. It just means that you have to be a little bit more strategic and know where to look for and get some help like Catalin to show you where you can find the most delicious food and still enjoy, you know, the whole idea of Italy and Italian food. Because a lot of times people travel here or move here because they're drawn to the food and drawn to that lifestyle. You can still have it with some restrictions and just with a little bit of help. So thanks again to my guest, Catalin Valera, for joining us today and providing her guidance and expertise on this subject. It's time for listener questions. Just like the old radio call-in shows, my team has picked 3 listener questions, all left on our voicemail. I have no idea what these questions are, but I haven't been stumped yet. Are you ready? Let's get started.
We plan to move to Arezzo and wondering, how do we come across legitimate, trustworthy contractors to work on our home? Do you have any advice? Where to go? What are the resources if we don't know anyone?
Oh, such a good question. And actually a really common question because a lot of people that are buying in Italy right now are buying with the idea to do some renovations. Not always huge. Sometimes people want to build up from a ruin, but often there's some updates that need to be done in a home. And finding a contractor to help you here in Italy is difficult. I mean, I think it's difficult everywhere, but in Italy for a foreigner, it can be particularly difficult and a little bit risky if you don't speak the language or know who to call. And from the sounds of your message, you don't feel like you have any contacts locally that you can reach out to. But I'm going to remind you that in Italy, it really is who you know. And this is a country that is built on relationships. And although I know you said that you didn't know anyone, you probably do. You just have to go back in those pages in your brain and remember who you've met when you purchased the home. So starting with your real estate agent, contact your agent, tell them what you're wanting, that you're looking to renovate or do something in your home, and if they have anybody to recommend. And if they say they don't, then ask them, well, do you know, does one of your colleagues have somebody, or can you refer me to somebody else who might be able to refer me further down the road? We have something called Pronto Pro here, which is very similar to Angie's List, but you know, for foreigners, for renovations, it's better to have a referral. Even if you have neighbors, I don't know where you live or where your house is, but if you have neighbors close by, you should always introduce yourself for obvious reasons, but also ask them, tell them what you want to do and ask if they know anybody or know somebody who knows somebody that can help you out. And the reason that this works really well is because people don't vouch for people here unless they're really sure of them, because it's all about bella figura, which means it's all about your reputation and how you look. So your neighbor's not going to refer you to a horrible person typically, because if it goes really bad, they're going to look bad. So it's almost like this little step in between you and the contractor, the person you're going to hire, that qualifies them a little bit. You know, you can just keep working through that. Try a couple of tips I can tell you. You can even maybe in your local comune, your town, find an architect, an office of an architect or an engineer, and go speak to them and see what kind of services that they offer as well. What you should try to really focus on is making sure that your workers are local. Maybe not the project manager, they could be from out, but the workers and the people who are getting your permits, things like this, should really be local because they have a direct contact with the planning office, and these permits and things can take some time, and it's a bit quirky here. So again, it's all built on relationships. So hopefully try that, and I hope you can find somebody to help you in your house.
Almost 2 years ago, my husband applied to the Miami consulate for his Italian citizenship by descent. When it turns 2 years, if we haven't gotten the citizenship recognized, what are our options? I believe it is 2 years by law that they're supposed to process the application. And it seems that things in the Miami consulate have slowed down to what's equal to a crawl. Do you have any ideas of what we should do? Thank you very much.
Yeah, great question. You know, citizenship, first of all, let's talk about the consulates, because the consulates, not just in Miami, but all over the U.S. and Canada and Brazil, I mean, all over the world, we work in consulates everywhere, and they are all very, very slow. And I think some of it is just naturally slow, and some of it is still bogged down from the closures during COVID. In any case, things are taking significantly longer than they are supposed to take. And for citizenship, you're correct. They have, from the time they accept the application, they have up to 2 years to make a decision on your application. Now, they could come back to you in, you know, 1 year and 11 months and 25 days and say, listen, I need some more documents from you. Can you get back to me? And then the clock kind of stops then. They have more time in order to make the decision. And we do see that some consulates are using this little trick to give themselves a little bit more time, not just with citizenship cases, but also with visas as well. We see this once in a while. So if you've been waiting for a lot longer, first of all, if you get up to the 2 year mark and you haven't heard anything back, contact the consulate directly. Send them an email, send them a PEC email if you can. A PEC email is a registered email that you can get through Italy. Actually, you can buy them online, or you can just ask somebody from Italy who has a PEC to send an email for you. It's like a registered letter, but via email. And these are official emails so that it shows that you've actually made the requests, and they can't deny that, you know, they didn't get the email. So you can send them a PEC email and ask them to give you an update on the status of your application. And sometimes this will just poke them a bit and get them to respond to you and move things forward. If after a couple of attempts you haven't heard anything and you've gone beyond the time frame, really your next option is to attempt to move the jurisdiction out of the consulate and over here to Italy. This is a big decision though, and this is a big move, that if your application is already in process at the consulate for 2 years, it's likely better just to keep it there and bear with them until they make the decision. Because if you try to move it out of there, you have to get the application back, and then you have to make sure it qualifies for a court case here, because there's some rules with jurisdictional cases here when we're moving it from the US to Italy. And then you'll still have to wait for court and then wait for a decision. So you're still looking a few more years down the road if you end up doing that. And I know this is all really bad news, because there's no way to make it go a lot faster. It really is a test of patience and perseverance, really. So like I say, send a PEC email. If it's been 2 years, send a PEC email and keep following up with them. And if it's been, you know, a few months after you've been trying and they still haven't done anything, or you haven't heard anything back, then you can look into taking a legal case here in Italy. Well, I hope this helps, and good luck on your citizenship.
Hi, Samantha. This is Sal, and I had a question in regards to buying property. I'm seeing a lot on social media about these towns paying you to purchase a house there, or these villas or properties being sold for just a euro. What can you tell me about the pros and cons if I wanted to potentially look into doing something like that?
Well, really popular question about a subject that I know there's tons and tons of stuff online about, you know, buying these 1 year houses or moving to a little town, you know, that's going to pay you to move there or start a business. These are all initiatives in Italy that are designed to help bring more people into, you know, I don't like to use the word dying towns, because they're not. They're just, the populations are just really dwindling. They're small, remote areas that the comunes and the municipalities are really trying to get people to move to. So what they do is they put these initiatives out there. And the most famous one, of course, is the 1 euro properties, or the 1 year houses. And we've heard stories of people who have bought them and renovated them. And as a matter of fact, I just watched one last week of a woman who bought one in Sicily. And I think she bought it for, well, it was a symbolic euro. By the way, that's all it is a symbolic gesture. There's always more fees. Her actual purchase price, I think, was around $5,000 or $6,000 to get this mess of a property that she had to renovate. And she's up to almost $500,000 now finishing it. Now, it's a big property. She's done a beautiful, beautiful job of it. So really, in the reality is that, yes, you can buy a property for 1 euro in Italy. Symbolically, it's really going to cost you between 5 or 10,000 euros just to get the key and the deed, as long as the deed is clean and everything is safe for you to purchase it, and then begins the renovation. One thing to keep in mind is that these low-cost properties, very low-cost properties, are not habitable. So if you're thinking, well, listen, I can buy a really cheap 1 euro home for $5,000, let's say, and use that as my residency for my visa, this is not going to work, because they're not habitable. There's usually a lot of work that has to be done in order just to bring them up to, you know, standards so that you can actually live there safely in the comune. The other initiatives that are out there that say you can open a business, or they'll pay you to move there, smart working. There's this little town in the center of Sardinia, beautiful Sardinia, that is trying to bring people in. One thing to keep in mind is that these initiatives are very, very limited. Usually there's a budget that the comune has to pay people, and it usually dwindles down to a few hundred a month. euros a month. And also you need a visa. And this is what's always left out of all of the information out there, is that sure, they'll pay you or you can get a 1 year house and move here, but you still need to find a way in. So if you're not European or Italian or married to one of those, you're still going to need a visa in order to take advantage of any of those initiatives. Well, that's all for this week's episode. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions about visas, citizenship, property, and, well, really anything about moving to Italy that you would like me to answer in an upcoming episode, please feel free to send us a voicemail at our website at smartmoveitaly.com/podcast, or just click on the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you can find all of the resources and the links to the people and the places that I mentioned in this episode inside the show notes. Ciao for now. A New Life in Italy podcast is a production of Sentire Media, created and hosted by me, Samantha Wilson. Production by London Nero. Research and script by Maggie Marullo, and with special thanks to Ali Frothingham, Sofia Pisana, and the entire team at Sentire. Follow A New Life in Italy wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, if you're thinking of moving to Italy, whether full-time, part-time, or for a lifetime, come and see me over at smartmoveitaly.com, and we'll help you get here and start living your best life. And don't forget, if you love this episode, please rate and leave a review. It's much appreciated. I can't wait to meet up with you again next week, same time, same place. Ciao for now.
Sentire Media.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentire Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's sentiremedia.com, and find out how to submit your show.